So today I'm going to talk about some recent physics I've been doing with several different collaborators. I'm going to talk about mainly abelian, or in fact, all abelian topological phases. And I'm going to talk about some interesting way to organize some of these properties of these systems and how it relates to interesting topological defects and entanglement. Let me first thank my collaborators. So I have my student, Mayuk Khan, and Jeffrey Teo were two very instrumental collaborators. Jeffrey's now at University of Virginia as a faculty member. Jeffrey, Eduardo, and I had some monster paper that came out last year, which I'll only attribute one slide to. And then I have some other work with Jennifer Kano, who is now at Princeton as a PCTS fellow, and Mike Mulligan, who's at Stanford, on entanglement that I'll get to at the end. So the first part of the talk is going to be on anionic symmetries and the subsequent associated twist defects, and the second half is going to be on entanglement. So let's begin with the sort of framework I'm going to discuss this in, which is that of abelian topological phases. And abelian topological phases can be represented in the topological limit as some abelian Chern-Simons theory. And essentially what you do is you take an integer valued symmetric matrix K and you plug it into this Chern-Simons form where you have a bunch of U1 gauge fields alpha, R of them in fact. And you can represent basically abelian topological phases in this way in the topological limit. So it turns out that all of the bulk topological data is contained in this matrix. So things like the ground state degeneracy is given by the determinant of the matrix on a torus. The center charge of the matrix is given by the signature of this matrix, basically the signs of its eigenvalues. Different quasi-particle excitations are represented by integer vectors in this case. And so given some integer vector, that can represent some sort of anionic quasi-particle. And you can calculate the statistics of these quasi-particles, and it depends in this exponential way on the inverse of the K-matrix. You can also calculate the topological S-matrix, which is like the mutual statistics between different quasi-particles by plugging in these integer vectors with this also this inverse of the matrix. So all the bulk topological data is contained with this set of numbers. This is a nice way to organize a lot of features about abelian topological phases. For non-abelian ones, this becomes problematic because you can't use the simple representation, but for abelian ones, this does a great job of organization. So let's give an example of how the data is organized. So I'm going to now talk about a structure which is inherent in the K-matrix, which is the quasi-particle lattice. So for the Laughlin state, a one-third state, the K-matrix is just a one-by-one matrix given by the number, in this case, 3. And the image of this matrix, basically taking this matrix and multiplying it by any integer vector, represents the set of local electron excitations. So K times 0 is no electrons. K times 1, which is the number 3 here, is 1 electron. 6 is 2 electrons. 9 is 3 electrons, et cetera, in this case. And so this represents the lattice of local quasiparticles. So the image of this matrix over the integers is the lattice, is a way to represent the lattice of local quasiparticles in the system. Now, the dual lattice of this image takes more points. So now we have the entire set of integers and also the negative integers. And the dual lattice, it turns out, includes not only the local particles, but also the fractional quasiparticles. So 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8 are all fractional quasiparticles. And for the Laughlin state, this is like the e over 3, 2e over 3, e, et cetera. And so as you think about each number here, it's just basically an e over 3 quasiparticle, and 2 is 2e over 3s, and 3 is 3 over 3s fused together. And so we have this lattice structure for the quasiparticle lattice. Okay. Now, for topological properties, it turns out you cannot topologically distinguish anions of the same color. Topologically, they're the same. Now, by symmetry, you can because they have different charges, but topologically, they represent the same thing. And so if we only want the anion sectors, we take the quotient of the image of K divided by the dual lattice, which gives us these 3 quasiparticle sectors, which is the trivial vacuum state, up to electrons, the e over 3 quasiparticle up to addition of electrons, and the 2e over 3 quasiparticle up to the trivial addition of extra electrons. So this is an example of a 1-by-1 matrix. It turns out that this type of lattice picture works for any K-matrix. You essentially take the different columns, or in this case, the different rows of this matrix. They form essentially integer lattice vectors. And the lattice given by these integer lattice vectors is the lattice of local quasiparticles, which are the clear or white states here. So for the toric code, or discrete Z2 gauge theory, this is our K matrix. We get a square lattice. The local quasiparticles have lattice vectors of 2, 0, and 0, 2. And the dual lattice are these colored states here. And for this, we can actually work out the quotient of the image of K divided by the dual lattice, and we get these 4 quasiparticle sectors, which are the well-known 1 EM psi of the toric code. We have the vacuum, the magnetic flux, the Z2 charge in the fusion of those two, which is typically a fermion. So you can also do this, for example, for this sort of bilayer fractional quantum Hall state. This is the SU2 level 1 state. This gives you a different lattice, in this case, a triangular lattice. The quasi-particle sectors is only 3 non-trivial quasi-particle sectors here, and they represent some fractional quasi-particles in this bosonic quantum Hall state. Okay, so the reason I'm introducing these lattice pictures is because it's very easy to understand certain properties of the system, which are known as anionic symmetries. So an anionic symmetry, let's start with the Laughlin state, is a symmetry which permutes the anion sectors in this case. So, for example, I have my K matrix, and if I rotate my K matrix by some integer-valued unimodular matrix, W, then this acts as some point group operation on this lattice, okay? So these symmetries take local quasi-particles to local quasi-particles, but they don't have to take anions to themselves. They could take them to other anions of the same color, or they could take them to an anion of a different color. So one example of a non-trivial anion permutation symmetry or anionic symmetry is when W is minus 1, it switches 1 and 2 in this case. So it permutes or switches the E over 3 quasi-particle into 2 E over 3 quasi-particle. Now, these two things have different charge, but if I'm only thinking topologically, they have the same statistics, and so it's actually a valid symmetry of the anions, not of the charge symmetry, but of the anion structure itself. For the toric code, we have more symmetries. We have C2 symmetry, rotation by 180 degrees, rotation by 90 degrees, and other reflections. It turns out you can also have translation operations which are not point group-like, which can lead to some space group structure and some non-somorphic operations, which I'm not going to talk about. And so today we're going to focus on sort of these point group type of operations, which somehow rotate the, or reflect these lattices around some origin, which is my vacuum state in this case. So let's think about the point group operations. So essentially, the set of all W satisfying this belong to a group which is called the automorphisms of this K matrix. It's basically the maps of the point group maps of the lattice to itself, which preserve local quasi-particles. We also have inner automorphisms, which are a subset of the total number of symmetries. And the inner automorphism take anions to their exact same color. They basically take an anion to itself up to the addition of local quasi-particles. So it takes vacuum states to vacuum states, plus electrons, it takes the E over 3 to E over 3, et cetera. The point group permutation symmetries are given by what are called the outer automorphisms, and they are basically the quotient of the full group of automorphisms divided by ones that are trivial, the ones that just take quasi-particles to themselves. So if you think about the toric code, we've got lots of different possible operations. So 180 degree rotation takes 1 to 1, E to E, M to M, psi to psi. These three sets here are formed the inner, a set of inner automorphisms. They take the quasi-particle types to themselves, up to local quasi-particles. But rotation by 90 degrees, or reflection around x equals y in this case, permutes the E and the M. It leaves the psi unchanged and leaves the vacuum unchanged, but permutes E to M. Okay. This is the only type of non-trivial operation allowed in this case, because the toric code, E and M are the only ones that share the same statistical properties. Psi has different statistics usually in this case. And so these are sort of the only non-trivial symmetries you would expect to be able to change here, okay? So these are inner, these are outer. It turns out that since this reflection here is equivalent to 90-degree rotation up to an inner automorphism, these represent the same symmetries. There's only one basically non-trivial symmetry element in this case. And we would say that the sort of set of outer automorphisms is the Z2 group represented either by no transformation or when W is sigma X, which switches E to M in this case. Okay, now the general problem of taking some K matrix and classifying all the different allowed symmetries is usually very complicated. Usually it requires us to consider very, very detailed understanding of different lattices and in very high dimensions, right? So if I have a 3x3 K matrix, that's a 3-dimensional lattice. If I have an 8x8 K matrix, that's an 8-dimensional lattice. So you're thinking about symmetries or different symmetry properties of different lattices. It's a very general problem, and it's hard to classify in total. But we made some progress for certain restricted sets of states. So given some simply laced Lie algebra, so some Lie algebra, let's say, the simply laced ones in the Cartan classification are the A sub n, D sub n, and E sub n series. I'm going to tell you what these are in a minute. It turns out that the Cartan matrix, which is some mathematical structure of this Lie algebra, is a symmetric integer matrix. And if you take that matrix and plug it in as a K matrix, it turns out that this gives you an abelian topological phase. It's chiral. It's a fractional quantum Hall state. And its edge theory is exactly the Wessumina-Witten conformal field theory at level 1 of that exact Lie algebra structure. So given my Cartan matrix of the Lie algebra, I make that plug that into my bulk Chern-Simons action. I derive my edge theory from my bulk Chern-Simons action by gauge invariance, and I get this Wessel-Mina-Witten theory at level one on the boundary. Okay, so the way to think about the A sub n series, these are the SUN Lie algebras at level one. These have n anion sectors. Okay, it turns out that the n anions have statistics like the one over n Laughlin state, but it turns out these are bosonic versions. The local quasiparticles are bosonic instead of fermionic. And so they have slightly different filling fractions and charges, but the statistics look the same as Laughlin states. The DN series, even though the series n is any integer, it turns out they always have four anion sectors, always have four. It turns out that when n is even, the four quasiparticles have statistics and fusion properties like the toric code. They look like 1, E, M, and psi. And for odd values of n, it turns out they look like this, what's called the doubled semion theory, where you have still four quasiparticles, but they have a slightly different statistical structure in this case. And so it turns out that not all n gives the same structure. Different values of n have slightly different abelian phases in this case. So the statistics depend on n. And it turns out the E's are exceptional Lie algebras. E6 turns out it looks like a SU2 level one up to some extra trivial sectors. It has two anions, one vacuum sector, one sort of semion. E7 sort of looks like SU3 level one. This approximation is something I can tell you about later if you're interested in. E8, it turns out, is a unimodular matrix. It has no anion sectors, just the vacuum sector. It is an integer quantum Hall state of bosons in this case. Okay. So I'm going to tell you about the anion symmetries, but just to sort of make the picture complete, let's look at the other Lie algebras. The non-simply laced ones have integer Cartan matrices, but they're not symmetric, so you can't just plug them in. Yeah.
So for E6 and E7, are you saying that the entire content is the same, or there's extra trivial?
So there's extra non-chiral sectors which are trivial. It's sort of like saying if I take the E6 Cartan, if I take SU2 level one, which is a 2x2 Cartan matrix, and I augment it with sigma x's direct sum, I can rotate it to the E6 Cartan matrix in this case. It's their stable equivalent in this case, yeah. Okay, so it turns out the non-simply laced ones, which are the other Cartan Lie algebras, have a Cartan matrix. It's integer valued, but it's not symmetric. So you can't just blindly plug it in as a K matrix. And it turns out the reason is because these series are intrinsically non-abelian, even at level one. So F4 and G2, which are two exceptional Lie groups, are both non-abelian, and they have Fibonacci anions. The B sub N series look like the odd values of SON in this case. These have nine anion sectors, and they all look like non-chiral Ising topological orders with slightly different abelian phases. It turns out that if you interlace the BN and DN series, you get exactly the Kataib 16-fold way, which alternates between abelian and non-abelian chiral superconductors with different Chern numbers. And so you can construct this 16-fold classification by interlacing the BN and DN series. And finally, CM, which are these SP groups, are complicated, and each SP group, as far as we know so far, has a different topological order. So I don't know how to classify the CNs yet. The rest of these are understood in this way. Okay, so let's take the abelian ones. I'm not going to say anything else about the non-abelians. Let's take the abelian ones and think about their anionic symmetries. So it turns out that while typically classifying the anionic symmetries is complicated in general, it turns out that you can map the problem of classifying the anionic symmetries of these things to a mathematical problem of just identifying the symmetries of the Dinkin diagram of each Lie algebra. So it turns out these are the same mathematical problem. You can map them onto each other. It's not obvious at first. And so we can just stare at these diagrams to figure out what allowed anionic symmetries you have. And so it turns out that if you just stare at the different spatial symmetries of these these Dinkin diagrams, then all the ANs have a maximum of a Z2 symmetry. It's reflection. This represents charge conjugation of those anions. D sub n also just has a Z2 symmetry. E6 has a Z2. E7 and E8 have no anionic symmetry groups. They have no symmetry in this case. So this is the full story, except for one exception. The one exception is SO8 level 1, which has a more symmetric Dinkin diagram. And this Dinkin diagram, it turns out, has a bigger symmetry, which is the permutation group on three elements. Okay. Now, the anions of this system represent the anions of toric code, 1 EM psi. And you would think that naturally that has a Z2 symmetry. I already told you it's a Z2 symmetry. But the point is that for SO8 level 1, the abelian phases are modified such that all three particles, EM and psi, are all fermions. And because they're all fermions, it turns out they have the exact same statistics. You can permute among them in this case. Okay, this is an example of how this triality symmetry or this triality property of SO8 level 1 enters this type of physics in this case. So as far as I know, for all the theories I know of, S3 is the biggest anionic symmetry group that's been found so far. There's another system which has S3, which I'm not going to talk about, but maybe I'm sure there'll be bigger ones. But for the simple cases we know, this is the biggest one we know of. Okay, so given this symmetry, what can you do with it? It turns out we can make interesting defects from these anionic symmetries. Just like with classical global symmetries, you can make defects like vortices and domain walls and things like that. So you start with some topological phase and you cut it to make edges. Now these edges have some gapless theory, and now you can imagine that you're gonna glue the edges back together but with some twist. This is the common way to make a defect. So it turns out that gapping terms, basically ways to glue this seam back together, represent maps between the different local quasiparticles on both sides, because only local quasiparticles can tunnel through the vacuum in this case. And so if we're thinking about different ways to gap this out, we have to think about different connections between the top and bottom edge. These can be represented as maps between the lattices on both sides. So if I think about the Tor code, I can map the lattice on this side as a one-to-one map into the lattice on that side, and it gives me a tunneling term. I could also imagine taking the lattice over here and mapping it to a rotated lattice. Local quasiparticle structure is the same, so the local quasiparticle tunneling will be very similar in this case. But it turns out that you get an interesting property. So these different tunneling terms give rise to some defect in the seam here. So you have some defect with some sort of branch line here. And it turns out this is called a twist defect, because if you drag some quasiparticle around the defect, it turns out it changes the anion type. So on one side here, this lattice maps one-to-one, it takes red to red. This lattice maps red to blue because it rotates it. The gapping term rotates the anions in this case. In this case, the E quasiparticle will be changed to an M quasiparticle. Now, E and M aren't exactly the same, so what that means is the defect has to be able to absorb whatever the difference is between E and M. And what that means is that there's some structure here related to the type of quasiparticle changes across here. And so, in fact, for this particular theory, the object which sits at that defect is actually some Majorana bound state in this case, because it has to absorb the fermion parity difference between the E and M quasiparticle in this case, but they differ by the fusion of a fermion. Okay, so there are many examples of taking anionic symmetries and making these type of twist effects. Any type of any one of these anionic symmetry mappings gives you a different type of twist effect, or can give you a different type of twist effect. We can take this one step further and ask, what happens if these twist effects get promoted from being semi-classical, and now we make them quantum excitations of the system? You can imagine taking this global anionic symmetry and then gauging it, making it a local symmetry instead. We can imagine taking these twist effects and making them deconfined excitations of our system, basically. So making them local. And so here our twist effects have a branch cut, right? If we gauge the symmetry, the branch cut's washed out. It's no longer physical. And so we'll be left with a point-like object, which is an excitation or flux of our gauge symmetry. So it turns out you can do this. You have a global anionic symmetry, you can gauge it. And it turns out that this gives rise to a new type of topological order system, which is called a twist liquid. People have other names for this. So the idea is you start off with some parent anion theory with a global symmetry, this anion permutation symmetry. The twist effects are like the fluxes of this symmetry. And then you imagine deconfining these fluxes, saying that now we're going to gauge the symmetry, promote it to a local symmetry. And so what happens is that the basic idea is that the twist effects are the fluxes of the anionic symmetry. They generally have non-abelian quantum dimension, like they contain a Majorana fermion, for example. The original anions in the parent theory can still exist in the new theory, but they have to form orbits. So now instead of having an E quasiparticle and an M quasiparticle, the twist effect mixes that. So somehow we have to make E and M equivalent because they're basically related by some gauge flux. And so what happens now is that the original anions have to form orbits of the symmetry operation. So instead of having an E or an M, you have to create a new quasiparticle with quantum dimension 2, which is E plus M. And so when it goes around the defect, it switches from E plus M to M plus E, which is the same. It turns out through this gauging procedure, the edge central charge is unmodified. The total quantum dimension gets multiplied by a factor of G, which is the order of the anionic symmetry group. And it turns out that this can be, you can actually write down a Hamiltonian model for this process, this gauging process, using the conventional Levin-Wynn string net model. Okay. So one example is that if I take the Tor code, which I just showed an example of, and I gauge the electromagnetic switching symmetry, it turns out you get an Ising cross Ising bar theory. So your theory becomes non-abelian. It now has, it's a non-chiral Ising theory with Majorana fermion anions in it in this case. So it turns out that there's a general relationship that if you take any of the DN series and gauge it, you always get a different element of the BM series. So if you take some Tor code and you gauge it, you always get some kind of Ising cross Ising theory. If you take the double semion model and gauge it, you also get some kind of Ising cross Ising theory with different abelian phases. And there's actually about, I think about 150 pages of manuscripts here, these two manuscripts together, 180, 170, which talks about this process in detail. And I'm not going to say anything more about it than this one slide. It's just a nice way to understand what happens if these anionic symmetries become gauged.
I was
just wondering. Yeah.
In this abelian case, is it always not non-anomalous?
Oh, good. Yeah. So, okay. So, this is why these papers are so long in principle, because you have to make sure that there are non-obstructed solutions to the hexagon and pentagon equations when you promote these defects to local quasiparticles. Okay. So, as far as I know, the answer is you have to be careful about obstructions in this case, and which are end up being classified by some group cohomology structure and things like that. So it's not clear that they're always non-anomalous. What I think is that depending on the symmetries, I think there's always a non-anomalous version of these type of things, because in principle, but I think if you pick some certain symmetry realizations with extra symmetries, they may be anomalous in this case. If you only consider, I think if you only do this, if you only think about the topological level, don't think about adding any extra symmetry enhancements, for example, then I think they won't be anomalous.
I think there are examples when even that is anomalous, right? Because there are these two types of obstruction. There is kind of fusion and pentagon.
Yeah.
I think even at the fusion level, you can get an obstruction which is just related to this anionic symmetry.
So I don't know of an example that's obstructed, but I believe you could construct examples which are obstructed in that way as well. The starting point for our paper was starting from a valid fusion theory, which is not obstructed at that level, and then gauging from the valid fusion theory in that case. And then you can apply the Lemon-Winstring model construction if you want from there. But I think there is a lot of structure. In fact, very carefully talk about some of these aspects as well in this case. But yeah, there's a lot of structure that has to do with whether or not you can gauge them without causing an obstruction to begin with, whether they can exist on their own in two dimensions, for example, type of thing. But yeah, I'll refer you to these papers because it's a detailed story in this case, or we could talk afterward. Okay, so we've used these sort of pictures of anion lattices to talk about defects, talk about anionic symmetries. I'm now going to use them to talk about entanglement. So there's two recent developments in the theory of abelian phases, which to me I found very surprising and very interesting, and which immediately made me think about questions of entanglement. So the first thing is that the bulk boundary correspondence is not nearly as unique as we even thought it was to begin with. For some reason, we have this idea that bulk boundary correspondence is a unique thing. It's not unique. I think we understood that, but now it's even less unique than I thought it was to begin with, or we thought it was to begin with. So one idea is that it turns out that for these topological phases, the bulk properties are determined only by coarse information of this lattice. The lattice, only a few details of the lattice go into determining the bulk properties. It turns out the boundary properties care about the details of the lattice itself. So it turns out the bulk properties only care about something which is called the lattice genus. The boundary properties care about the lattice itself. And it turns out there's a complicated many-to-one mapping between a bulk and the boundary. So given a bulk, there's many different boundary theories which can be attached to it in this case, okay? Each of these sort of different boundary theories are what's called stably equivalent to each other. I'm not gonna talk about that too much. But so we have some theory, we have some boundary, and it turns out that there's very different boundary theories that could be wrapping around the same bulk, okay? So let me give you a sort of simple example of how we knew the bulk boundary correspondence was not unique to begin with. So suppose I start with a chiral fermion. So this is my energy versus K for, say, quantum Hall effect. I've got a single chiral fermion. Now, the bulk boundary correspondence is not unique because I could easily put a sort of Dirac fermion attached to it in this case, right? So at high energy, for example, I may have some Dirac fermion. I may be able to change my chemical potential so that I go from having one right mover to now having two right movers and one left mover. But this non-uniqueness is already captured by the index, which is the number of right minus the number of left. That already captures this sort of non-uniqueness. It turns out that what can happen is you can take the right mover and just add tunneling to one of the left movers to gap out one of the Dirac fermions in this case, and you'll be left with one, the only thing stable is one chiral fermion. What this paper by Jin Kano and Chaitanayak, Mike Mulligan, et cetera, showed from KTP was that you can do something highly non-trivial. You can actually, instead of adding tunneling or backscattering, you could add interactions which mix these gapable modes with the gapless mode to generate a new edge theory in this case, which basically you can develop an edge phase transition which doesn't affect the bulk, which changes the nature of the edge theory. In fact, you can do something, which is actually very violent to the edge. You can change the effective edge conformal field theory from something with local fermionic excitations to something with local bosonic excitations. You can do all kinds of interesting things to change the nature of the edge theory. So in fact, you can't change it to any edge theory. There's some constraint on which theories you can change it to, which is the stable equivalence property. But the point is that you can get lots of different edges attached to the same bulk, and they're related by edge phase transitions. So that's sort of the first point. The second point was actually developed by Michael Levin, which is that different topological phases can share gappable interfaces. Very different topological phases can share an interface which can be gapped, right? So there are conditions under which even very different gappable, very different topological phases can share a gapped interface. So one example is the taking eight Landau levels, which is an integer quantum Hall state of fermions, putting it next to the E8 state I talked about earlier, which is an integer quantum Hall state for bosons. It turns out these are one's fermionic, one's bosonic, but you can gap out that interface. Okay, that's not that surprising because neither theory has topological order. More surprising is the fact you can take a system with a nu equals 1 integer quantum Hall state and a nu equals 1/9 fractional quantum Hall state, and you can find tunneling terms which allow you to gap out this interface. Okay, so now you can take something which is integer and something which is fractional. You can find a way to glue them together with a gapped interface. Okay, for this particular example, you break charge conservation symmetry. But that doesn't destroy the topological properties. That just changes the charge conservation property to make sure the U1 anomaly is not broken or not violated. But still, this is still a very sort of, to me at least, a very surprising result that you can say glue an integer state to a fractional state with a gapped interface in this case. So with these two ideas in mind, it immediately brought to my mind questions of entanglement. Okay, so the low-lying entanglement spectrum of a topological phase is supposed to have similar properties to the physical edge spectrum. Right, this is something which has been conjectured and something which has been proven over and over in numerics, et cetera. There's been some even rigorous proofs in some cases. But if the bulk boundary correspondence is not unique, which edge theory do you get when you cut? So do I find the trivial one? Do I find a more complicated one? Which one do I find when I make a cut? Can I go from one to the other? What part does the entanglement spectrum find? Okay. A second question is that we know that we can have topological entanglement entropy. Right? So if I have a theory here, which I can glue together a theory without topological entanglement entropy, here I get area law. On the right-hand side, I get area law with a sublating correction in this case. Okay? So how does the topological entanglement entropy change? For example, if I change my cut from one part to the other, if I drag my cut to the interface, how does this topological entanglement entropy change in this case? This is a question we might ask. So I don't have that much time, so I'm not going to focus on this entanglement spectrum part. It turns out that you can, in fact, modify interactions in some way to get different edge theories in the entanglement spectrum. I'm going to focus on the second question about if we have, for example, starting off with two different topological phases, if they can share a gapped interface, how does the entanglement entropy depend on where you cut? So the way we're going to answer this problem is using coupled wires. There's some beautiful work by Rex Lundgren, who's at Texas, and Oshikawa, which shows how to do this for the Laughlin state. Actually, there's some related work by Xiao Chen and Eduardo, which shows how to do this for ladders. And the idea is we're going to build our quantum state, or our topological state, from coupled wires. So I take some gapless wire theory, I add some backscattering terms to gap the theory out, and I create a theory which has some gapless edges, and I have some topological phase in this case. So given any abelian topological phase, I can tell you which wire to put here, like what CFT, I can tell you what tunneling terms to create, and I can create that topological state for you. Okay. So now we ask, what happens when you cut in this case? Okay. So it turns out that the entanglement spectrum of a gapped phase can be understood in terms of gluing the edge states together, and this is why the coupled wire description is so useful in this case. So to calculate the entanglement, what you do is you calculate the entanglement due to the coupling between the low energy theories on the edge, or the cuts in this case. So one example is taking a single component Laughlin state, let's say with filling factor 1 over m, the low energy theory on a single edge, on a pair of edges in this case. So if I make a cut, I've got this right mover and this left mover, the bosonized version of that right mover, left mover is given by this Luttinger liquid. I can add some term which glues the edges together, which is this gapping term, which is a tunneling term. And this gives me a way to understand how the left side of the system is coupled to the right side. It's coupled through this edge theory at low energy and this gapping term. Okay? So it turns out that if we assume that this G is either relevant or has extremely strong, we will flow to a limit where the system is gapped. And if I think about the gap being large, I can take the limit where I can expand around some minimum of my cosine potential to get a massive free boson theory in this case. Okay? So that may not be an okay approximation, but it turns out for the entanglement, it turns out to give all the right results. So I'm going to at least stick with this approximation. I'm going to assume basically I've flown to the limit where this is extremely large and expand this interacting theory to a free boson theory. So in the free boson theory, the Hamiltonian breaks up into the zero mode component and the oscillator component. And because of that, we can easily calculate the free boson entanglement using Peschel's method. This is a way to calculate entanglement in free systems, free fermions, and free bosons. So the reduced density matrix can be written in terms of the entanglement Hamiltonian. Because of the free nature of the bosons, The density matrix breaks up into a zero mode part, tensor product with an oscillator part. And that means the entanglement Hamiltonian splits up into a zero mode part and an oscillator part. So when we calculate the entanglement entropy, we find area law plus some subleading correction. And the area law part comes from the oscillators, and the zero mode part correlates with the subleading correction in this case, the constraint. And it turns out that we find exactly the answer you expect, which is the, and this is the result of Lundgren et al. They find you get exactly the square root of the quantum dimension, log of the square root of the total quantum dimension for the Laughlin series in this case. So we set out to generalize this for any type of edge theory, so any K matrix. So they basically did it for one component K matrices. We wanted to do it for any size K matrix, and we expected to find the same result, and I'll tell you we found something slightly different in a minute. So if you consider a generic multi-component Lundgren liquid, we have some K matrix which enters our edge theory, and maybe some velocity matrix here, which is non-universal information. You can couple them together with tunneling terms. There's some set of tunneling terms. This set of tunneling terms will encode how you're gapping out the different modes, and the set of tunneling terms is not unique. There's many of them. There's many different types. It turns out in this case, we can still take this same limit. If we gap out the edge theory completely, it turns out we can write it as a set of different Lundgren liquids, so we can still break up the reduced density matrix into two components, and you still get area law minus some correction in this case. So we were expecting to find that the subleading correction was just the log of the square root of this K matrix. But we found something different. We found, in fact, that it was the log of the square root of the determinant of possibly some other K matrix. And this K effective depend on what choice of gapping terms you picked. So for some choices of the gapping terms, you did indeed get the log of the square root of this K matrix. And for other gapping terms, it turns out that this K effective changed in this case. I'm going to tell you now in a minute how to interpret this. So let's give the simplest or one example. So let's think about an entanglement of a hetero interface, which is like the problem I told you earlier where I take two different systems and I glue them together. I have a gapped interface. And I'm going to cut right between them. So let's take this example of having a system. Neither system here has topological order. They're both integer quantum Hall states. This is one for fermions. This is one for bosons. The K matrices of both these theories have determinant 1. And so we should expect no subleading correction from either one of them. And so in fact, if you cut in these two areas, you'll find that the entanglement just goes like area law, possibly with a different coefficient in this case. But now it turns out if you cut between them, you find area law minus log 2. Okay, so we can ask, where does this extra factor of log 2 come from? Both theories are integer. Where does the log 2 come from? So one way to visualize this is thinking about these different topological phases in sort of a string condensed picture. So I think about the left-hand side is that I have a bunch of Wilson loops over on this side in the condensate, which are my my electron lines. I have a bunch of electron lines which are in the condensate that represent my local quasi-particle condensate. On the right-hand side, I've got a bunch of boson Wilson lines, which are in my ground state condensate. So basically, the ground state is a superposition of all different closed string configurations. In the infinite gap topological limit, it's an equal weight superposition of all string configurations. If I tell you how to glue the left side to the right side, then what I've told you is that these bosons are now made up of even numbers of fermions. So beforehand, initially, there's bosons. But now if I find a way to gap them together, the tunneling term tells you that I can microscopically break up these bosons into pairs of fermions, basically. Okay? And now what you can see is that, in this case, any Wilson line configuration is allowed here. Any Wilson line configuration is allowed there. But now, on this case, there's a constraint. Because when the Wilson lines go across, they have to actually combine to form pairs to be in the ground state of the other side. To be in the ground state, they have to form pairs as they go through, because the tunneling process has to make pairs on one side and break pairs on the other side. And so this configuration here of having an odd number is actually not allowed. This adds an extra constraint which lowers the entropy. So I have an extra constraint in my system which reduces the entropy. This type of argument is exactly the same type of argument you see for why the Tor code has a subleading correction of the entanglement. You have some string condensate, and there's a constraint on what happens on the interface between the area of interest and its complements. We have an extra constraint in this case. Okay? So this constraint means that I have to have the lines that cross here in the ground state have to have even fermion parity, which means there's a restriction. That means odd fermion parity lines aren't allowed. It reduces the entropy exactly by a log 2 factor because of this parity contribution. Okay? So the extra constraint reduces the entanglement and makes it not area law. It's actually subleading in this case. Okay?
The interface theory kind of looks like a sine wave theory.
Yeah.
And you can cut solid constraints by solid. Does it mean that you have to be always in the sector
So it means that there is a so it means that on the line here, this sine Gordon theory along the line has to have some constraint on the zero modes, the ones that form the ground state in this case. And so normally there would be some solid configurations which may be low energy, but now it's restricted, so they're lifted from being the ground state configuration. That's right.
But if you create some flux through the system, can
you? You might be able to change it from even to odd, but I think you would still get the log 2. I think you would still get the log 2. So it may now allow odd instead of even, but I think you'll still get the log 2. Okay, so this is not the only example. You can also do this with hetero interfaces of any Laughlin state, almost. So the integers. So if you have two Laughlin states, you can get some result. I'm sort of running out of time, so I'm going to go to the next interesting section. But essentially, you can find if you cut in one region, you'll get its appropriate entropy. You cut in the other region, you get its appropriate entropy. If you cut in the intermediate region, you get some linear combination of these entropies plus some correction, which is corrected by the greatest common denominator of KL and KR. Okay, but the idea is the following thing. The gapping terms between the two topological phases represent maps between the local quasiparticles on one side and local quasiparticles on the other side. Why the local ones? Because the local ones are the only ones that can tunnel through the vacuum. Like, only physical electrons or physical bosons can tunnel through the vacuum. So essentially, the tunneling terms represent maps from the image of the K-matrix on the left, that lattice, to the image of the K-matrix on the right. So it's a map between lattices, which tells you how to glue these states together, which means that these subletting corrections depend on the maps between these two lattices. Okay? So for the nu equals 8 E8 interface, the maps on one side go from an odd lattice to an even lattice. And this, at best, this can be done in a 1-to-2 way, right? On one case, I have all my lattices all integers. The other case, my lattices all even integers. That's the E8 side. This mapping from all integers to even integers at best can be done in 2-to-1, which is why you get this kernel, which is why you get this extra log 2 correction in this case. So it turns out that the maps between the lattices are not arbitrary. To get a valid map, they must map a countably infinite number of points from one lattice to the other lattice. And so essentially what it means is that you can map the lattices onto each other, or you can map them in some rotated and stretched way to get some kind of moire pattern type of thing, where you get extra periodicity, but eventually they have to be commensurate at some periodicity. Furthermore, they have to satisfy an extra geometric condition called primitivity, which means that when you glue the edge theories together, you're not introducing extra symmetry breaking degeneracy. Okay, so this is about hetero interfaces. The last thing I'm going to say is, what happens if you map a system to itself? What happens if you have a homogeneous interface between a system and itself, and you can map, what about maps from a lattice to itself in this case? So I said that the gapping terms are represented by maps from one K-matrix to another. What about maps from a lattice to itself? So suppose I have a homogeneous system. Okay, I have all these dark green areas which represent interactions between wires which gap my theory out. I can imagine now changing this gapping term on one region, or I can imagine then changing all the gapping terms between to be some different map in this case. So I could have some map I started with. I could also imagine putting some different map to gap the theory out. So it turns out that there are ways to gap the theory out, different ways, where you introduce no extra local symmetry breaking degeneracy. The topological ground state degeneracy is unchanged. The edge theory is unchanged. The Hall conductance and thermal Hall conductance are unchanged. And there's no new topological quasiparticles. So there are different gapping terms you can add, which create basically the same topological state. Okay? They have all these same physical properties. Right? So let's take an example, which is the integer quantum Hall state with nu equals 2. So the local quasiparticle lattice is a square lattice. This is my set of local quasiparticles. And if I just add, if this purple interaction represents single particle backscattering between wires, free fermion wires, then the maps I'm talking about here is a 1-to-1 mapping between one lattice and itself. And so then I map right on top of it in this case. So I take one lattice and I map it 1-to-1 right into itself. In this case, the entropy will just be area law. Okay, you get this 1-to-1 mapping. It turns out that for this system, you can also introduce a different mapping. You can take this mapping and map the local quasiparticles like that. You can create some kind of extra moire pattern where you've sort of introduced a bigger commensurability factor. You've introduced larger periodicity. It turns out that this represents multi-electron hopping in some sense. But multi-electron hopping, which does not introduce any extra degeneracy in the problem, and has all these same properties. So basically, there's other hopping terms I can add where the new theory, the new gap theory, has all the same properties, but where the entanglement entropy is reduced in this case by a factor of 5. And you can see the factor of 5 comes from the fact my new unit cell has 5 local quasiparticles in it in this case. And so there are many more examples like this where you have maps from one lattice to the other lattice. And depending on the size of the new unit cell, this will change the sublinear correction of the area law. Okay. Now, what does this mean? So there's sort of two ways you might think about this. One is that the sublinear correction of the area law may not be unique in this case. Now, we know the sublinear correction is supposed to be universal. And I'm saying that you can possibly change it. But the important thing is that even if you change it, the set of numbers you can get depend on the K-matrix. They don't depend on any other non-universal information. They only depend on the full structure of the lattice, right? Typically, for the Levin-Wing, Kataev-Preskow entanglement entropy, it depends on the determinant of the K-matrix. What I'm saying is that if we allow ourselves to resolve how the topological phase is glued together at high energy, how it's microscopically resolved to glue together, you might be able to change this. But you can only change it to a certain restricted set of logs of integers. And these are determined by the lattice structure, because they're determined by the ways I can map this lattice to itself in this case, okay? Satisfying some conditions that I'm not changing any physical properties, right? So I can also have maps between lattices which change the physical properties. What I'm saying is I'm restricting myself to ones which keep the physical properties the same, but yet change this number. So one way to say this is that maybe the sublinear correction is not unique, but it's still universal. It's still, I can get more and more finer information about the K-matrix structure. Okay. That's one possible interpretation. The other possible interpretation is that maybe we should really think about these as different topological phases, but with the same physical properties. So maybe we should think that I can get different sublinear corrections, but this really means it's a different phase of matter, which is distinguished by its entanglement. I don't know, I'm agnostic. Any interpretation is fine. The third interpretation is maybe this is an artifact of the wire construction. Okay. So I've assumed this particular type of wire construction. I've boiled down my entanglement properties to the coupling between edge states, which we think is true, can be done for has been proven to be okay for a gap topological phase. But maybe the wire construction adds some extra ingredient, which is not generic. So this third contingency, I don't know how to answer. So we're currently trying to address this numerically to try to calculate things numerically, but haven't had much success yet. Also, we're trying to think about this using TQFT, so basically trying to see if we can derive this type of extra correction by adding extra ingredients into a Chern-Simons calculation using the replica trick, but that also has not taken off yet. So anyways, the idea is that from this picture that we may have to understand how the topological phase is glued together to be able to tell you what the sublinear correction is to the area law. And so in a numerical model, depending on the interactions, you may find one number, you may find another number. It depends on basically what the interactions are. And you may not be able to, so the point is that even if all these physical properties are the same, this sublinear correction could be different. So it may be, I mean, the only way out of this are the ways I discussed, but maybe that it's an artifact of the wire construction, I'm not sure. So I'll end there and take questions.
More messy microscopic lattice model that wasn't neatly divided into these starting out lattices, like gapless wires. So then you don't exactly know where, let's say it's still joining two different phases. You don't now know exactly where to cut.
Yeah.
It's going to be this like region where things are in between. So what will happen to that gamma?
So that's an important question. So, and I don't know the answer to that. Usually with entanglement and topological phases, if you do it for a microscopic lattice model, we always have to agree on where we're going to cut. Because if I cut, you know, for example, you could cut in something you might call your non-physical space, like in your, you know, your auxiliary space or whatever else, and then you wouldn't get the entanglement you expected. So that's an important question that's unresolved, I would say. One you can immediately think about something which is like that, but even the wire construction, for example. Suppose that I take a system made out of nu equals 1 and nu equals 1/9, and I stagger them alternately. And now if I cut in one region, I get 0, cut in the region, I get 1/9, what's the right answer? You know. And in some ways, what I would hope is the system would flow to some fixed point, which would pick one or the other, right? And so maybe some fixed point would choose nu equals 1, depending on the interactions, or choose nu equals 1/9, right? And so it might be that if the tunneling is dominated in one way or the other way, you get some dimerized limit. I'm not sure, but but this is an important question, especially for lattice model realizations. I don't know the answer. Yeah.
So the fact that there is more than one possible edge, like some of the examples you covered at the beginning, that's like edge to construction.
Yeah.
Surprising. I mean, some of the other ones are certainly much more surprising. But the case you presented last should have interpretation in terms of some sort of Chern-Simons theory. After all, the system is uniform.
Yeah, so
some kind of toroidal gauge group, So the gauge group you're using is just some torus.
Yeah.
And you're dividing that by some simple transformation.
So yeah, so it's a great question. So the issue is that the new topological properties are happening with the local quasiparticles. Okay. And what that means is that if I take the topological limit of infinite, if I take the Chern-Simons limit, all of the Wilson lines are in the vacuum with equal weight superposition, right? Every single condensate, one electron, two electron, three electron. What I'm saying is that what I should really do is tune slightly away from the infinite gap limit, turn on this tunneling term, and now what will happen is that one electron lines may be higher energy than two electron lines. And so in reality, there's some hierarchy of things where the ground state maybe is now only a superposition of some set of local quasiparticles.
But that effect in theory should have some description of the
topology of the field. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, and this is something we're working on. I don't know the answer yet. So this is something which I think is, so I'm hoping this will be resolved because this is the same question I have. Is like, how do we represent this using topological theory? The topological properties are the same, except the entanglement entropy. And so if you want to think, so there is one way that we've been thinking about how you might get the entanglement entropy, which is that when you're constructing the wave function built from your topological quantum field theory in order to calculate the density matrix, you have to specify that the wave function terminates on some boundary, right? And so now if I imagine doing the replica trick to cut the system, I have to now tell you how I'm gluing these different sheets together. And every time I glue a sheet together, I have to tell you which gapping terms I'm gluing it together with. And it might be that I could pick different gapping terms. I have different choices of boundary conditions or different choices of gapping terms other than just the typical one of the minimal coupling in this case. Now, it might be that in relativistic theories, those ones are not important and you always, and maybe symmetry or Lorentz invariance might restrict you to the common one, but I'm not sure. But there is some outlet already in the entanglement calculation where you might be able to develop this by looking at the way you glue the replica manifolds together. And you can glue them together using different gapping terms, which may give rise to some kind of defect, which may change the topological entropy. But this is some work in progress, and this is a really important question, but I don't know how to answer it yet.
Is it related to somehow what is concept to be local?
Exactly. Yeah, so all we're doing is we're saying that what I was calling the vacuum state, the anion one in this case, right, was at first some collection of particles. And now I'm saying with this new gapping term, it's only a subset of those particles.
What you put as a partial region,
yeah,
it may not be the vacuum, but it's
somehow. Yeah, that's right. So it's a region in which the electron is, say, confined, but two electrons are deconfined, something like that, right? So this subletting correction is not, it's not creating any extra anions. What it's doing is it's confining local quasiparticles. So what I'm saying is in these purple regions, there are some local quasiparticles which can't go through there. And so because of that, they're confined to the green regions, for example. And so they don't represent, so in the ground state, you can't form a Wilson line by, say, taking a single electron line around this whole loop. You can only, say, take a pair and make a line out of that or something like that. But exactly, so I'm changing the energies of the local quasiparticles somehow. And if I take the full Chern-Simons limit, that somehow is not obvious of how that could be seen, but maybe with boundary conditions or replica trick stuff, you could see it. But I'm not sure. But you're exactly changing what you say, what you'd be calling local in that case. Yeah.
How can a local particle become confined?
So what I'm doing is that I have two wires, right? In this case, So if I have two wires and the vacuum's in between them, then the ground state will be some property of the wires. It won't be that I take an electron out and put it in the vacuum. It's going to be a higher energy state, right? I mean, the vacuum has some gap, right? So now if I make some tunneling term between them, what I'm saying is that when the tunneling term becomes relevant, it opens some gap. It still will cost energy to take some subset of electrons, like one electron out. Maybe my gapping is like a pairing or pair hopping term. So I take my gapping term might be take two electrons here, hop two electrons over there. So I could take one electron and do it, but it would cost higher energy. So there wouldn't be a ground state configuration in that case.
But that doesn't mean it's confined.
What I mean is that it costs more. Yeah. So what I mean is that by confinement, what I mean is that if I took a electron world line and dragged it through all these interfaces, it would cost finite energy in this case, is what I'm saying. Every interface it crosses is going to cost energy proportional to that width of that interface in this case.
wherever.
Pay cost wherever, yeah. So I mean, so maybe confinement's the wrong word. It's going to be a high, it's going to cost energy in some sense, yeah. So it's not part of the, it's no longer part of the ground state condensate. Maybe the right way to say it. Taking a single electron Wilson line would be an excitation of the system. So if I take that and act on the ground state, I don't get the ground state back. I get something else. Yeah. So maybe confinement's the wrong word. Sorry.
But if you tunnel some tunneling, not just nearest neighbor light, do you still have protected?
Yeah. So I'm assuming that I've tuned it so that I know which terms are most relevant, right? So if I turn on competing interactions, like ones even neighboring wire competing interactions or next nearest neighbor interactions, that's a harder story. And then the other problem is too is that I can't take this free boson limit to calculate the entanglement because I have to deal with now I have to deal with now terms of competing interactions. So yeah, I don't. So I would imagine that if you turn on interactions, what will happen? You may get a correlation link. So it may be that you see that the subleading correction depends on position in some way smoothly instead of a sharp thing. That I could certainly imagine happening. As long as the next neighbor interactions don't close the gap and cause a transition, as long as they don't close a gap, then it should be the same in this case. Because in order to change that subleading correction, I have to make my edge wire gap. I have to have an edge transition or an interface transition in some sense. I have to go through. You can show that's true in this case. So next nearest neighbor interactions will change the correlation link for sure, and we'll get competing things. But I think it doesn't change. I mean, it won't change the topological phase unless it closes the gap in some region of the system, which could happen. It's strong enough strength.
Yeah. About your last paper, suppose you look at your cylindrical curve.
Yeah.
You make a trivial.
Yeah.
You take your cylinder, but you only have some topological trivial, and you look at the entanglement. Do you still get this?
So I think that you will. So this extra term. Okay, so I haven't done the calculation because I've done it in the translation variant limit. So the term.
The 11 when basically the formula is for topological trivial.
Sure, but I think the only way this could change is if I had anion flux through this line, right? Yeah. So this correction is not due to anion flux in the non-trivial region. Now it could be since so. Now the other way it could, there is a way it could be an artifact. One other way it could be an artifact of the wire construction, the fact that I am keeping translation symmetry along the cut. So there could be something with translation symmetry where I'm. That maybe something's protected by translation symmetry or something and goes away if I break it. That I don't know about. But it's not due to anion flux in the line. One way you can see that is because if you have anion flux in the line from your guys' paper, you see that you change the subleading correction by something to do with the quantum dimensions of the anions. And you can show these numbers are not necessarily connected to those numbers. They're not, yeah. But yeah, that's a good question. This is something we thought initially as well, that it could just be the anion flux, but we carefully checked that it wasn't. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, do you think there is also might be a problem with that?
I mean, so all these things I think are in this case, all these things are related to whether or not the translation symmetry matters. I think on this direction. I don't see how ABC would give something different unless this is an artifact of the translation symmetry, right? I mean, I have a gapped phase. It flows to a fixed point. I'm thinking about I've drawn it with these wires, but in principle, in the limit this gap is large, it becomes a homogeneous phase in some sense, right? It should flow to a homogeneous phase. Xiaoliang Qi and Andreas Ludwig, I think, at Katsura showed that for a gap topological phase, you can reduce the entanglement entropy to a problem of looking at gluing the edge states together, right? So as long as the argument holds in this case, then I think that the ABC argument should work just as well as this. But I don't know. It could be that I think if it breaks down, then it would have to do with the fact there's translation symmetry along one direction here, and maybe that somehow simplifies things too much. And if I break translation symmetry, maybe the subleading correction will go away or something, but I don't know.
Why did we do this
I'm sorry? It could be that they're pneumatic somehow, and the that would be the statement that this is an artifact of the wire construction or depends on translation symmetry. So those things, so it could definitely be that that's something there, which is why we're trying to check this using a TQFT discussion. But so I. So if I cut with some angle, I don't have to do the calculation, right? Because we've agreed earlier I'm going to cut between wires, right? So I don't know how to do the calculation, which is why I want to. And so until this is reproduced using something like clear numerics or TQFT arguments, then yeah, I'm not sure what to say about that. But yeah, these questions are definitely important. I don't know how to calculate them yet. But yeah, the exact same questions that are bothering me about this. Yeah, thanks.